I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
The sky's so blue.
The KSL Greenhouse. Information and great talk about your home, garden, and your lawn. If you love perennials, can't get enough help on landscape design, or just want to keep your lawn and vegetable garden pest-free, grab a pen. It's the KSL Greenhouse on KSL News Radio.
And it is a beautiful morning for gardening. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Shalams, Ton Bettis with you this morning. Taking your calls, 801-575-8255. You can text us your questions at 57500. Feature of the morning for the top of the hour here is the greater peach tree borer. And, Ton, we're talking about this morning. This is a problem that you see, what, every year at this time, and you've put together a video as well to help folks out.
Yeah, Savannah and I put together a video, two or three weeks ago, maybe a month ago, on the greater peach tree borer, and we posted it last week because mid-June is when you really usually start treating for it, but it's the number one killer of peaches between the ages of about 3 and 5 years old.
Okay.
So it's a little moth that is a mimic, and so it looks like a wasp, but it's really a moth, and it goes in and lays eggs from June until mid-September, especially on stressed peaches. Mm-hmm. And so if you have a peach that has southwest winter injury or borer damage from a previous year, those trees are going to be more likely to get the borer into them than really healthy peaches. And so one of the things to do about it that's not a pesticide is to take care of your trees. Make sure that you have no grass around the trunk and you have a good 3-foot ring around the tree if it's in the lawn that's just bare ground. And then make sure that you do your pruning well and wrap the trunk up with the white gauze tree tape in the fall, or paint it with water-based latex paint diluted 1-to-1 with water, so that as the sun gets on the trunk and shines on it during the winter, that the heat is reflected off and the bark stays intact and healthy. So those are just some things you can do to prevent it that are non-pesticide, but even with that, it's recommended that you treat the trees with an insecticide. There's about 3 options for homeowners, and they include Carbaryl, which used to be sold as 7, but it's just sold as Carbaryl now. Then permethrin, which would be like in permethrin 38 plus. And then if you want an organic option, there's Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew and other fruit tree sprays with spinosad in it. Now, spinosad has to be sprayed weekly, to where the other 2 need to be sprayed every 3 to 4 weeks.
You mentioned this happens when the trees are stressed. In a time of drought, aren't all the trees stressed? I mean, are you seeing more of this now than you have in the past?
It's just here every year, but with the drought, especially if the orchards or areas where these trees are planted are not getting regular water. So peach trees during the middle of the summer, along with other fruit trees, need to be deep watered every 7 to 10 days to a depth of about 18 inches. Then you can cut it off. But what happens when you drought stress a tree is it can't produce as much sap that it uses to flood the boreholes to hopefully drown the borers out. And so water stressed trees that have a lack of water are going to be far more susceptible to borer damage in general than a healthy, well-watered tree.
Mm-hmm. And you have put the video up on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page for anybody who'd like to see it. Any other thoughts for those who are listening this morning?
We just got a text in saying, why is it important to remove grass from around the base of the tree?
Mm-hmm.
Especially on peach trees, it's really hard to see if you have greater peach tree borer in the tree because the borer gets into the base of the tree.
Oh.
From about the bottom foot to a couple of inches below the ground level. So, but to have that, especially when the trees are young, if you have a good 3 or 4 foot ring of bare soil around that tree, or you could put some bark mulch in there, the trees will actually grow a lot faster. So you can double the growth rate of a fruit tree by having it growing in bare soil because it's not competing with the grass for nutrients.
All right.
So there's that, and then it's just easier to observe to see if you need to water, to see if you have borers low down. But any fruit tree or any tree that's especially in grass, it's good to have that 3 to 4 foot ring around the base so that you can just observe it, and there's lots of other advantages.
All right, before we leave the topic of peaches, we did have another texter asking about a peach tree that drops peaches early in the year, well before they ripen. It's been doing so for the last few years. The tree's on the north side of a mobile trailer house, and they're wondering why that might be.
It could be for lots of different things, but mm-hmm. It's usually drought stress will cause it, and lack of nutrients in the soil is another reason that they would drop. And it could just be that it's a variety that's prone to doing it.
And the number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us your questions at 57500. And you can see Ton's video on the peach tree borer. It's not that easy to say. Peach tree borer on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. We're going to take a break, and we'll come back with your calls and questions. Barry in Highland, you're up next.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse Show. Maria and Ton with you this morning, taking your calls and your questions. Next listener, Ton, would like to know what you would recommend planting between stones of a flagstone path. It's on the south side of a house. They have used elfin thyme, which was beautiful for a while, but then it took over, covered all the stones, and then started to die out. What would you recommend? It gets a lot of sun.
Well, the elfin thyme may have died out depending on the kind of soil it was planted into. A lot of these ground covers that you would put in between the pavers really need well-drained soil. And so it's really common for elfin thyme and other thyme cultivars and species to die out after 2 or 3 years if they're in a really heavy clay or a soil that for some reason doesn't drain.
Mm-hmm.
The other problem you run into is if this trail or the pathway is walked on a lot, there aren't any ground covers except for maybe actual grass that will survive that much foot traffic. And so we're assuming that it's not used that often. So there's actually a number of ground covers out there that they could try. There's one called Anacyclus, or sometimes referred to as Mount Atlas Daisy. there's a, well, the south exposure, I was going to say there's a dwarf plumbago, but that one I think might get a little too hot. Mm. So, man, there's just, they could try, if it is well drained, they could try the thyme again, but I think that it probably got fungal disease in there. But Scotch moss might be one that they could try. It's a darker green. It looks a little like moss, but although it's not, then they could maybe try some sedums in there, like some of the stone crops that are a little bit lower growing.
Right. There's some really small ones. There are. Just beautiful. Mm-hmm.
But
they work better around the edges.
They
though.
Do.
If they're getting stomped on. That's a problem.
Yeah. There's also creeping speedwell or creeping Veronica that they could try. Mm-hmm. But every time, everywhere they get a lot of foot traffic, these are just not going to work. But the speedwell seem to be a little more tolerant of wetter soils.
Right. I almost figure out the soil issue and plant the thyme again.
Yes.
That works there. Let's go to Barry in Highland. Good morning, Barry. How can we help you this morning? Barry, are you there? Okay, Barry, good morning. What is your question? Okay, we're going to have to wait for a second. Apparently having a problem with Barry's connection there. Next person. Okay, let's try Barry again. Barry, are you there now?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, Barry. What is your question?
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I have a box elder tree about 5 years old. It's about 15 feet tall. It's always been extremely healthy, and it actually still is, but not like it has been over the past years. I use fertilizer spikes on it every year. And this year, we noticed it wasn't getting as full in the spring. It's got, and the leaves are super shiny. Didn't think much of that. And the grass is also shiny. And then that was pointing pretty obvious to aphids, which sure enough it is. And I used a spray on it, on a hose end sprayer, but it was just stuff I had on hand that was more for fruit trees. Turned up the dose a little bit, but it really hasn't done anything to it. And nobody at the local gardening store seemed to really know how to direct me on what to do. So, but I really need to get rid of these things because they're all over the tree.
I would probably, at this point, because you've tried something else and the tree's big, I would try a systemic. It will take a number of weeks to get into the tree, but you can find, there's several out there made by Bayer, Ortho, VPG, but it's going to be a season-long, what's usually called like tree and shrub insect control. So there's many brands. You could clothianidin, imidacloprid. There's several actives, but I would use a systemic. It will last for an entire year, and when it looks like that the tree's health is in danger, that's when I recommend turning to those systemics.
Okay, and that's the systemics are ones that you actually put in the ground?
Yes, you mix them up in a bucket and pour it around the trunk of the tree.
Okay. Well, I will do that. Thank you. That helps because they were telling me I should use different sprays and this and that, and it just I didn't think that was going to be working very well.
Well,
so
if the
I will
tree,
try that.
The only,
it.
I don't normally recommend systemics for this, but it looks like the tree's health is in danger, and so the systemic is going to be not really the nuclear option, but it's one that you can do if the tree is in danger.
Okay. Well, I will do that because I want to keep this looking the way it has been over the past years, and it doesn't quite look that way this year, so I will do so. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Barry, for your call today. Next listener, Ton, lives in San Pete County at a high elevation, and they're interested in transforming part of their yard, xeriscaping, and maybe doing, you know, the park strip more water-wise. But their question is, what are some of the best xeriscape gardens in central Utah to get some ideas from?
Well, I would stop by some local garden centers to see if they can figure out what the local garden centers recommend locally. There are so many things out there that it's kind of a hard question. So, I mean, as far as trees, you know, spring snow crab apple, Canada red chokecherry, any of the crab apples would mostly be hardy up there. There's a few that may not be. Hawthorn trees would be fine. As far as bushes, you know, there's so many newer junipers out that are ground cover junipers, shrub junipers that are quite pretty. You know, there's just so many things that you can look at.
Right.
You know,
sounds like they're looking more for a garden park like the Conservation Garden Park or a place to go where they can see ideas.
Yeah. And I don't know that there is one in central Utah. Mm. They're in the Salt Lake City area. The Conservation Garden Park would probably be the closest.
Boy, that's a tough one. All right, let's go back to our phone lines. And Ree is in Salt Lake City. Good morning, Ree.
Morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. First of all, I'd like to thank you for your show. It's very, very helpful.
Well, thank you for listening.
Also, I'm hoping you can tell me I didn't do something wrong that I already did. So this is an after-the-fact thing. There's a crabapple tree that's about 15 years old, and it's about 15 feet high, that the area around it has been neglected for quite some time. So I was out there today trimming the suckers. There were suckers at the base, and then about 2 feet or three out from the tree, there's a ton of suckers. So I cut them all back, and then I very lightly sprayed the cut suckers with Roundup. After I did that, just the plain Roundup, not the high-powered kind or anything. After I did that, I thought, okay, this will just kill the suckers. And then I came in the house and started having second thoughts. Do you think I've damaged that tree?
Unfortunately, yes. It depends on how concentrated the glyphosate is. Was it ready to use, or is it one you mixed?
Ready to use.
So it's probably only 0.5%, but that is systemic. And so it works its way into the roots. And so all you can really do is be patient and see what happens. If it would have been washed off immediately after it was sprayed, that maybe would have helped. But I don't know that you've killed the tree at 0.5% concentration, but it's not. The tree's not going to like it.
Okay. So it's been almost 2 hours since I sprayed it. Is it too late to go out there and
it
spray
is.
Water?
It is. Literally, you have to wash it off within seconds.
Okay.
In the future, if you do something like that, there's a product called Sucker Stopper that you can spray on those that will prevent them from coming back. It's not 100%, but it does help.
Okay, very good. I sure appreciate your information.
All right, Ree, thanks for your call this morning. I don't understand the Roundup. It won't kill the weeds, but it'll kill everything else in seconds.
Well, the one thing that she has going for her, she used a ready-to-use, and those are usually only 0.5%. They're quite diluted. And if she didn't get a whole lot on those sucker sprouts, she may experience some leaf yellowing and a few other things, but I don't think it's going to kill the tree itself. But it's just the luck of the draw that it kills a tree and not the weeds if that happens.
Next listener is Carolyn in Orem, and she says her lawn is very yellow, feels like straw. Can she keep watering to revive it, or is it dead?
It's probably not dead. It might
all
be.
Of our lawns are looking starting to look like this, Carolyn, I'm afraid.
It could be dormant. And I wouldn't increase watering, but it needs about 1/4 to 1/2 inch of water per irrigation, 1 inch a month to keep it dormant, but it'll be yellow, but it'll be dormant. Otherwise, the recommendations are twice a week on the rotary sprinklers that shoot farther, 40 minutes per station, on pop-ups, 20 minutes per sprinkler station. And that will keep the lawn alive. It'll keep the lawn mostly yellow with some mostly green with some yellow spots. But if you wanted to cut back once a week, the lawn would go dormant, but the roots would stay alive.
All right. Hope I'm reading this next text correctly. This person has a 4-foot potted hornbeam. It started to leaf out, but it stopped growing when the leaves were only about 1/2 inch long. Anything they can do to help it?
Maybe plant it in the ground.
Yeah, I was wondering if that word was transposed by their text, but
it could be. I mean, hornbeams are one that 7 out of 10 do well and 3 out of 10 just seem to struggle.
Mm-hmm.
They are better suited for cooler areas like the Pacific Northwest or the Northern Midwest, where they don't regularly get above the low 90s. So I know this year is a little bit of an exception, but if it is still in a pot, they can try planting it to see if there's anything going on. It sounds like it may be a fungal disease, but there could be a lot of different things causing it.
All right. We have just a minute before the bottom of the hour news. The next person says their potatoes are about 3 feet high. How high do they need to be to heal up the stems?
What you would do is when the potatoes get a foot high, you heal in 6 inches. so that you only have 6 inches out of the ground. You let them grow another foot and then do that again. So another 6 inches. Once you've done that twice, you stop.
Okay. I didn't know that. Of course, I haven't grown potatoes in a long time.
You don't have to, but
I tried it one season.
Yeah. You keep the potatoes around the plant a little bit closer, and you may increase the number of potatoes per plant.
Right. I love them, but they take a lot of space, so you have to have a lot of space.
They do, and they're so inexpensive that in my limited space, I have a hard time growing potatoes because I can buy them usually 10 pounds for $3.
Right. And the number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500 back after the news.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.